This is the Cambridge Assessment International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, June 2022 examination in English as a Second Language. Paper 4. Listening. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number, and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you're all ready, here is the exam. Exercise 1. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. What did the woman make for her sister's graduation party? B. What did the woman forget to take with her to the party?
How was your sister's graduation party?
Great, thanks. I was planning to take some pizzas, which guests could eat with a salad, but her friends were already making those, as well as some cupcakes. Anyway, then I realised no one had thought about the decorations, so I did those instead. They looked great hanging in her garden.
Is that where the party was?
Yeah. So I arrived that evening in my car, then realised I'd left my sweater at home, but at least I hadn't forgotten her present. That was on the back seat. Anyway, the music was great, so I just danced all evening. I had a great time, and so did she.
How was your sister's graduation party?
Great, thanks. I was planning to take some pizzas, which guests could eat with a salad, but her friends were already making those, as well as some cupcakes. Anyway, then I realised no one had thought about the decorations, so I did those instead. They looked great hanging in her garden.
Is that where the party was?
Yeah. So I arrived that evening in my car, then realised I'd left my sweater at home, but at least I hadn't forgotten her present. That was on the back seat. Anyway, the music was great, so I just danced all evening. I had a great time, and so did she.
Question 2. A. What was the main subject of the talk that the man went to? B. What was the speaker's job?
A friend of mine who's an environmentalist recently invited me to a talk by someone she knows. I guess I just assumed it would be all about climate change due to my work relating to the weather. But the speaker actually focused on water pollution, also of great concern to me, so I'm glad I went. The speaker was impressive, particularly as it's not something she does professionally. In fact, she mentioned she'd recently trained to become a vet, and she seemed to find the work very satisfying. She's also a keen photographer in her spare time, so she had plenty of interesting images to show us. A friend of mine who's an environmentalist recently invited me to a talk by someone she knows. I guess I just assumed it would be all about climate change due to my work relating to the weather. But the speaker actually focused on water pollution, also of great concern to me, so I'm glad I went. The speaker was impressive, particularly as it's not something she does professionally. In fact, she mentioned she'd recently trained to become a vet, and she seemed to find the work very satisfying. She's also a keen photographer in her spare time, so she had plenty of interesting images to show us.
Question 3. A. What is the name of the venue where the woman will be performing? B. Which instrument will she be playing?
How are concert rehearsals going?
Fine, although we've had a change of location for the performance. It'll say on your ticket that we're playing in the festival hall, but that's been flooded, so it's been moved to the King's Theater. That's by the City Museum, in case you're unfamiliar with it.
I had an email about the changes, actually, but thanks. So, what are you playing in the concert?
Well, as you know, my main instrument's the cello, but I'm not bad on a few others. Anyway, they're short of a flute player, so that's my role this time.
Right.
As long as I'm not asked to play the drums, I'll be fine.
How are concert rehearsals going?
Fine, although we've had a change of location for the performance. It'll say on your ticket that we're playing in the festival hall, but that's been flooded, so it's been moved to the King's Theater. That's by the City Museum, in case you're unfamiliar with it.
I had an email about the changes, actually, but thanks. So, what are you playing in the concert?
Well, as you know, my main instrument's the cello, but I'm not bad on a few others. Anyway, they're short of a flute player, so that's my role this time.
Right.
As long as I'm not asked to play the drums, I'll be fine.
Question 4. A. What did the man injure during the rugby match? B. Who first treated his injury?
I heard you got hurt during the local rugby match. How are you feeling?
Better, thanks. Yeah, I'd been running towards the line with the ball when an opponent crashed into me and my elbow went into his chest and he almost stood on my foot. None of that seemed too bad until I suddenly realised I'd done something to my shoulder, so I needed help.
Oh dear.
Yeah, so someone ran to get the coach who was helping another player, but before he arrived, a spectator came to help. He really knew his stuff. He must have had medical training. I never got the chance to ask him, though, unfortunately.
I heard you got hurt during the local rugby match. How are you feeling?
Better, thanks. Yeah, I'd been running towards the line with the ball when an opponent crashed into me and my elbow went into his chest and he almost stood on my foot. None of that seemed too bad until I suddenly realised I'd done something to my shoulder, so I needed help.
Oh dear.
Yeah, so someone ran to get the coach who was helping another player, but before he arrived, a spectator came to help. He really knew his stuff. He must have had medical training. I never got the chance to ask him, though, unfortunately.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 2. You will hear a talk about an expedition to watch orcas, which are a type of whale. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Thanks for attending this briefing session for our whale watching expedition next month. The objective of the trip is to introduce you to the life of orcas, but we'll do some other activities too. Today I'll run through our schedule for our week on the boat. Our search for orcas will begin straight away. We'll join the boat at the harbour, where we'll set sail, going along the coast to where we're most likely to spot the whales, a large bay. However, it doesn't mean they'll definitely be there. So, to give ourselves a greater possibility of seeing them, we'll spend the whole day there. On day 2, the direction we go in will be decided partly by what the weather reports say. More importantly, we'll also have access to information about sightings. These will provide us with details about where the whales were and when and where they were last seen heading. You'll recognise the orcas as soon as we see them because of their striking black and white patterns. They have a fearsome reputation, but they're actually very caring and stick together in extended families for life. Occasionally, several of these form larger groups called clans of up to 150 animals. It isn't unusual for these clans to use invented sounds by which different groups can be recognised. Each evening there'll be a lecture about orca behaviour. You'll have learned about identifying whales on deck and observed them playing and doing something called spy hopping, where they raise themselves out of the water to look at their surroundings. What you won't get a good view of is things like hunting habits, and that's where the lectures come in. On previous expeditions, we'd take visitors swimming to get them nearer to the orcas, using masks and snorkels. However, due to greater understanding of these sensitive creatures, we now know this can disturb them. So we've replaced this activity with kayaking. It's amazing to see the orcas diving in and out of the waves. There's a great variety of wildlife in the area we're visiting, and there'll be plenty of opportunities to get your cameras out. Although it isn't too uncommon to notice bears near the water's edge, it's much more probable that we'll find some seals. If we're very lucky, we'll spot some eagles. They're very impressive. There'll be some stunning scenery too, volcanoes included. Around midweek, we'll leave the boat to climb the most active volcano in the region. You can see it for miles around, rising up from the wooded landscape. The rocky slopes of the volcano are bare in summer, but in winter, the surface is covered in snow. But it's the steam from it that'll really stand out from further away. Our week will end with a thrilling helicopter ride. This is where you'll be able to look down on the Valley of the Geysers. A geyser is a kind of hot spring where water is blasted powerfully out of the earth at intervals caused by hot rock boiling the water underground. Back on the boat, we'll have a farewell dinner and a firework display, which will be an exciting way to finish the expedition.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Thanks for attending this briefing session for our whale-watching expedition next month. The objective of the trip is to introduce you to the life of orcas, but we'll do some other activities too. Today I'll run through our schedule for our week on the boat. Our search for orcas will begin straight away. We'll join the boat at the harbour, where we'll set sail, going along the coast to where we're most likely to spot the whales, a large bay. However, it doesn't mean they'll definitely be there. So, to give ourselves a greater possibility of seeing them, we'll spend the whole day there. On day two, the direction we go in will be decided partly by what the weather reports say. More importantly, we'll also have access to information about sightings. These will provide us with details about where the whales were and when and where they were last seen heading. You'll recognise the orcas as soon as we see them because of their striking black and white patterns. They have a fearsome reputation, but they're actually very caring and stick together in extended families for life. Occasionally, several of these form larger groups called clans of up to 150 animals. It isn't unusual for these clans to use invented sounds by which different groups can be recognised. Each evening there'll be a lecture about orca behaviour. You'll have learned about identifying whales on deck and observed them playing and doing something called spy hopping, where they raise themselves out of the water to look at their surroundings. What you won't get a good view of is things like hunting habits, and that's where the lectures come in. On previous expeditions, We'd take visitors swimming to get them nearer to the orcas, using masks and snorkels. However, due to greater understanding of these sensitive creatures, we now know this can disturb them. So we've replaced this activity with kayaking. It's amazing to see the orcas diving in and out of the waves. There's a great variety of wildlife in the area we're visiting, and there'll be plenty of opportunities to get your cameras out. Although it isn't too uncommon to notice bears near the water's edge, it's much more probable that we'll find some seals. If we're very lucky, we'll spot some eagles. They're very impressive. There'll be some stunning scenery too, volcanoes included. Around midweek, we'll leave the boat to climb the most active volcano in the region. You can see it for miles around, rising up from the wooded landscape. The rocky slopes of the volcano are bare in summer, but in winter, the surface is covered in snow. But it's the steam from it that'll really stand out from further away. Our week will end with a thrilling helicopter ride. This is where you'll be able to look down on the Valley of the Geysers. A geyser is a kind of hot spring where water is blasted powerfully out of the earth at intervals caused by hot rock boiling the water underground. Back on the boat, we'll have a farewell dinner and a firework display, which will be an exciting way to finish the expedition.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear exercise 3. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 3. You will hear 6 people talking about their first trip to the cinema. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
My first trip was to an old cinema that was beautifully decorated outside, but with absolutely no sign of luxury inside. My family had said we were going to see a famous film that I'd love. I remember, as I was watching it, feeling taken right away from the miserable industrial town we lived in to somewhere imagined, which was wonderful. One bit was slightly scary, I guess, but I was used to that from the stuff my brother watched on TV. Anyway, I still remember that trip really clearly.
Speaker 2.
The cinema we went to was quite posh, I guess. It had bright red carpet everywhere, even on the walls. I'd never seen that before. In fact, the loud music, huge screen and the whole atmosphere made me feel less than comfortable. The cinema seemed full of energy, though, and what we watched was awesome. At the end, people stood up and clapped, which I thought was lovely. When we left, you could hear them chatting about the film. Most had clearly loved it.
Speaker 3.
I was taken to the cinema on my 10th birthday to see the latest spy film. Some of my friends had told me it was a bit difficult to follow, so I wasn't expecting it'd really be for me. But I remember sitting in my seat, eating popcorn and watching dangerous high-speed car chases and other stuff, and feeling just as thrilled as everyone else in the cinema. And even now, I can still recall that sense of excitement that I had about the whole trip.
Speaker 4.
My big sister took me to a film that was actually meant for older kids. She didn't seem to think it was a problem, and the cinema staff didn't notice, luckily. I'd read the book it was based on, so I knew what was going to happen. Otherwise, I'd probably have been frightened by the special effects. As it was, I couldn't sleep that night, but I certainly wasn't going to let my sister know that. I've seen a remake of it since then and was impressed by the scenes inside the castle.
Speaker 5.
My first experience of the cinema was in a place that was really smart inside. It had only just opened. And while I was watching the action film that was showing, with my favourite actors in, I remember thinking that the whole experience somehow brought all the audience together, even though we'd never met each other before. So, at the end, I was trying to hear other people's conversations to see if they were as impressed as me, and it seemed they were.
Speaker 6.
The first film I went to see at the cinema was a popular sci-fi film, so the place was packed, and I can remember the incredible visual effects I saw on screen. I'd never seen anything like them in my life before, and neither had most of the audience, judging by their reactions. And I remember my little brother didn't stop talking about it all the way home. Anyway, I've seen lots of sci-fi films since then, but sadly, nothing has ever compared with that first experience.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
My first trip was to an old cinema that was beautifully decorated outside, but with absolutely no sign of luxury inside. My family had said we were going to see a famous film that I'd love. I remember, as I was watching it, feeling taken right away from the miserable industrial town we lived in to somewhere imagined, which was wonderful. One bit was slightly scary, I guess, but I was used to that from the stuff my brother watched on TV. Anyway, I still remember that trip really clearly.
Speaker 2.
The cinema we went to was quite posh, I guess. It had bright red carpet everywhere, even on the walls. I'd never seen that before. In fact, the loud music, huge screen and the whole atmosphere made me feel less than comfortable. The cinema seemed full of energy, though, and what we watched was awesome. At the end, people stood up and clapped, which I thought was lovely. When we left, you could hear them chatting about the film. Most had clearly loved it.
Speaker 3.
I was taken to the cinema on my 10th birthday to see the latest spy film. Some of my friends had told me it was a bit difficult to follow, so I wasn't expecting it'd really be for me. But I remember sitting in my seat, eating popcorn and watching dangerous high-speed car chases and other stuff, and feeling just as thrilled as everyone else in the cinema. And even now, I can still recall that sense of excitement that I had about the whole trip.
Speaker 4.
My big sister took me to a film that was actually meant for older kids. She didn't seem to think it was a problem, and the cinema staff didn't notice, luckily. I'd read the book it was based on, so I knew what was going to happen. Otherwise, I'd probably have been frightened by the special effects. As it was, I couldn't sleep that night, but I certainly wasn't going to let my sister know that. I've seen a remake of it since then and was impressed by the scenes inside the castle.
Speaker 5.
My first experience of the cinema was in a place that was really smart inside. It had only just opened. And while I was watching the action film that was showing, with my favourite actors in, I remember thinking that the whole experience somehow brought all the audience together, even though we'd never met each other before. So, at the end, I was trying to hear other people's conversations to see if they were as impressed as me, and it seemed they were.
Speaker 6.
The first film I went to see at the cinema was a popular sci-fi film, so the place was packed. And I can remember the incredible visual effects I saw on screen. I'd never seen anything like them in my life before, and neither had most of the audience, judging by their reactions. And I remember my little brother didn't stop talking about it all the way home. Anyway, I've seen lots of sci-fi films since then, but sadly, nothing has ever compared with that first experience.
That is the end of exercise 3. In a moment, you will hear exercise 4. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 4. You will hear an interview with a book illustrator called David Watkins, who draws pictures which appear inside books. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
I'm with book illustrator David Watkins. David, you've drawn pictures for books for many years. What first made you want to begin drawing?
Well, I had lots of illustrated books as a child, many with brightly coloured pictures, and some of them were really funny. The book I kept returning to, though, had pages full of little drawings of people doing different things, and I'd spend hours studying them so that I didn't miss anything. And I decided I wanted to draw just like that artist. Although nowadays I tend to produce bigger, bolder drawings when I'm illustrating.
So, were you good at drawing from an early age?
Well, I was certainly never the greatest at drawing at school, but it was the thing I enjoyed more than anything else. So I just kept at it until I got better, and that took time. But I don't consider myself as someone who can just draw. I've had to really work at it.
But initially, you were unwilling to let other people see your work. How did you get over that?
Well, some artists ask people they work with for their honest opinions, but you can't always guarantee you'll get them, of course. And I did consider putting my stuff on a website, then seeing what the responses were, but I wasn't sure that'd help my confidence. So I created small boxes decorated with my drawings to give to people close to me. They were so pleased to receive them, they didn't notice the decoration, and strangely, that helped enormously.
So, any advice on how to improve drawing skills?
Well, the thing is that although books about how to draw can be helpful, you'll never learn to draw just by reading them. You actually have to do it. So it's important to build drawing into your day and use every spare moment to draw, when you're watching TV, waiting for a bus, whatever. And draw something you like. Something you're really into, say, or something from your own photos.
And I've heard people say you should never copy other people's work, even when you're learning to draw. What's your view on that?
Well, they're probably thinking you'll become too dependent on copying, and never be able to produce your own stuff in your own unique way. But I have to say I don't agree with that. Copying teaches you things about drawing that you just won't learn any other way. I copied a huge range of artists, although often people tend to just stick to one artist they like.
So how do you keep getting fresh inspiration for your work?
Well, I don't have many holidays, although I occasionally do other activities like walking. But I never go out without a notebook or my phone to get down any important thoughts. There's usually more than enough material even on the shortest walk to keep me going. Sadly, I rarely have the time to see what my friends in the business are doing, but I guess that could be useful if I was stuck.
And what about when you make a mistake in your drawing?
Well, every artist will do that. But if you worry about it too much, it'll stop you drawing altogether. I don't really think too hard about why the mistake happened. I used to keep working at improving the drawing, but I've since found it's more useful to just stop for a bit, then come back to the picture again later with a fresh eye. That works for most people, I think.
So you've just finished one project. Have you got another one coming up?
Someone I know has just finished a storybook for children, but she'll most likely do her own drawings, although I've said I'm available if needed. And, as you say, I've recently finished producing drawings for my own storybook, so for a change, I'm considering getting together the drawings I've done myself that I really love and publishing them. It'll be an achievement, even if no one wants to buy them.
Now you will hear the interview again.
I'm with book illustrator David Watkins. David, you've drawn pictures for books for many years. What first made you want to begin drawing?
Well, I had lots of illustrated books as a child, many with brightly coloured pictures, and some of them were really funny. The book I kept returning to, though, had pages full of little drawings of people doing different things, and I'd spend hours studying them, so that I didn't miss anything. And I decided I wanted to draw just like that artist. Although nowadays I tend to produce bigger, bolder drawings when I'm illustrating.
So were you good at drawing from an early age?
Well, I was certainly never the greatest at drawing at school, but it was a thing I enjoyed more than anything else. So I just kept at it until I got better, and that took time. But I don't consider myself as someone who can just draw. I've had to really work at it.
But initially, you were unwilling to let other people see your work. How did you get over that?
Well, some artists ask people they work with for their honest opinions, but you can't always guarantee you'll get them, of course. And I did consider putting my stuff on a website, then seeing what the responses were, but I wasn't sure that'd help my confidence. So I created small boxes decorated with my drawings to give to people close to me. They were so pleased to receive them, they didn't notice the decoration, and strangely, that helped enormously.
So, any advice on how to improve drawing skills?
Well, the thing is that although books about how to draw can be helpful, you'll never learn to draw just by reading them. You actually have to do it. So it's important to build drawing into your day and use every spare moment to draw, when you're watching TV, waiting for a bus, whatever. And draw something you like. Something you're really into, say, or something from your own photos.
And I've heard people say you should never copy other people's work, even when you're learning to draw. What's your view on that?
Well, they're probably thinking you'll become too dependent on copying and never be able to produce your own stuff in your own unique way. But I have to say I don't agree with that. Copying teaches you things about drawing that you just won't learn any other way. I copied a huge range of artists, although often people tend to just stick to one artist they like.
So how do you keep getting fresh inspiration for your work?
Well, I don't have many holidays, although I occasionally do other activities like walking. But I never go out without a notebook or my phone to get down any important thoughts. There's usually more than enough material even on the shortest walk to keep me going. Sadly, I rarely have the time to see what my friends in the business are doing, but I guess that could be useful if I was stuck.
And what about when you make a mistake in your drawing?
Well, every artist will do that. But if you worry about it too much, it'll stop you drawing altogether. I don't really think too hard about why the mistake happened. I used to keep working at improving the drawing, but I've since found it's more useful to just stop for a bit, then come back to the picture again later with a fresh eye. That works for most people, I think.
So you've just finished one project. Have you got another one coming up?
Someone I know has just finished a storybook for children, but she'll most likely do her own drawings, although I've said I'm available if needed. And, as you say, I've recently finished producing drawings for my own storybook, so, for a change, I'm considering getting together the drawings I've done myself that I really love and publishing them. It'll be an achievement, even if no one wants to buy them.
That is the end of the interview. In a moment, you will hear exercise 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 5, Part A. You will hear a lecturer giving a talk about sand mining, which is the process of removing sand for various uses and its impact. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Today we're going to talk about sand mining, removing sand from various locations, and how it affects the environment. Sand is a valuable resource as it has many applications in the building industry, but it's not as plentiful as some people might think. One of the issues is that not all kinds of sand are suitable for building purposes. In the desert, sand is shaped by the wind, which means it's too fine to be made into cement. Sand created by water is more rough, and as a result, it combines better with other materials. But this isn't the only industry that relies on the availability of sand. You might not realise that it can also be used in agriculture. Some crops, like watermelons, favour dry conditions and grow very well in soil with a high sand content, while other crops, for example green beans, prefer a heavier soil. Broccoli is another example of a vegetable that would not do well in sandy soil. So, where does sand come from? It can be extracted from a variety of locations, including the ocean floor and riverbeds, though the largest quantity of the world's sand is extracted from a lake in the southeastern part of Asia. The main exporter of sand currently is the United States. In fact, in the state of California, there have been a number of protests against sand mining on such a large scale, most notably at a beach there. The reason for such protests is the serious consequences sand mining has for the environment. It can badly affect water levels, wild species, and riverbeds. On a recent visit to a nature reserve near where I live, I wanted to find out about the consequences of sand mining there, and I learned that flooding is becoming increasingly common. The overall effects of sand mining are wide and far-reaching. I've mentioned just a few here. So, what can be done about it? Activists around the world are calling for their governments to take action to limit the amount of sand that's mined. scientists are experimenting with alternative materials, such as recycled glass. Some countries have even passed regulations requiring companies to replace sand with plastic waste in the maintenance and construction of roads. Also, straw is becoming increasingly popular in the building of houses. Now, does anyone have any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Today we're going to talk about sand mining, removing sand from various locations, and how it affects the environment. Sand is a valuable resource as it has many applications in the building industry, but it's not as plentiful as some people might think. One of the issues is that not all kinds of sand are suitable for building purposes. In the desert, sand is shaped by the wind, which means it's too fine to be made into cement. Sand created by water is more rough, and as a result, it combines better with other materials. But this isn't the only industry that relies on the availability of sand. You might not realise that it can also be used in agriculture. Some crops, like watermelons, favour dry conditions and grow very well in soil with a high sand content, while other crops, for example green beans, prefer a heavier soil. Broccoli is another example of a vegetable that would not do well in sandy soil. So, where does sand come from? It can be extracted from a variety of locations, including the ocean floor and riverbeds, though the largest quantity of the world's sand is extracted from a lake in the southeastern part of Asia. The main exporter of sand currently is the United States. In fact, in the state of California, there have been a number of protests against sand mining on such a large scale, most notably at a beach there. The reason for such protests is the serious consequences sand mining has for the environment. It can badly affect water levels, wild species, and riverbeds. On a recent visit to a nature reserve near where I live, I wanted to find out about the consequences of sand mining there, and I learned that flooding is becoming increasingly common. The overall effects of sand mining are wide and far-reaching. I've mentioned just a few here. So, what can be done about it? Activists around the world are calling for their governments to take action to limit the amount of sand that's mined. Scientists are experimenting with alternative materials, such as recycled glass. Some countries have even passed regulations requiring companies to replace sand with plastic waste in the maintenance and construction of roads. Also, straw is becoming increasingly popular in the building of houses. Now, does anyone have any questions?
Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about Yangtze River dolphins and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
The talk yesterday gave me lots of ideas for our presentation. I never realised sand mining had such an impact on the environment, did you?
Well, look at Yangtze River dolphins, the species we've just been researching. The ones that used to live in the Yangtze River but have died out because of sand mining.
But it wasn't just that, was it?
It was one of the reasons. Increased transportation on the river affected their environment too. From what I've read, commercial fishing was the key factor. Of course, water pollution played a role in reducing the number of creatures living in the water that the dolphins fed on.
It's awful to have lost them, isn't it?
Tell me about it. They were such amazing creatures and had unique features compared to other dolphins. One interesting fact about them was their stomach. While other dolphins typically have two, Yangtze River dolphins are understood to just have had one. And they had a massive mouth because of their huge jawbone, making it appear as if they had a permanent smile on their face.
Cute! And I read somewhere that when escaping from danger, Yangtze River dolphins could reach amazing speeds of up to 60 kilometres per hour, but they usually swam at around 30 kilometres per hour. Also, they lived in deep water because they were very shy and they would only come up to the surface for air.
And they swam in groups, right? Especially during the mating season in spring.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure I read somewhere that Yangtze River dolphins struggled with their hearing.
It was their vision, actually, but I wouldn't use the word struggle because they developed an advanced ability to use sound to figure out their location instead. It's known as echolocation. They also used it to socialise, avoid predators and express emotions.
I know a really interesting fact about all dolphins that might be relevant for our presentation.
Go on.
When dolphins are sleeping, half of their brains stay awake so they can control their breathing. Dolphins need 8 hours of sleep, but unlike us, their brain sleeps in shifts. Each of the right and left parts get 4 hours of sleep, just at different times.
And when they're awake, they spend most of their day finding food, apparently. They also swallow their food whole when they're feeding.
Awesome!
Now you will hear the conversation again.
The talk yesterday gave me lots of ideas for our presentation. I never realised sand mining had such an impact on the environment, did you?
Well, look at Yangtze River dolphins, the species we've just been researching. The ones that used to live in the Yangtze River but have died out because of sand mining.
But it wasn't just that, was it?
It was one of the reasons. Increased transportation on the river affected their environment too. From what I've read, commercial fishing was the key factor. Of course, water pollution played a role in reducing the number of creatures living in the water that the dolphins fed on.
It's awful to have lost them, isn't it?
Tell me about it. They were such amazing creatures and had unique features compared to other dolphins. One interesting fact about them was their stomach. While other dolphins typically have two, Yangtze River dolphins are understood to just have had one. And they had a massive mouth because of their huge jawbone, making it appear as if they had a permanent smile on their face.
Cute! And I read somewhere that when escaping from danger, Yangtze River dolphins could reach amazing speeds of up to 60 kilometres per hour, but they usually swam at around 30 kilometres per hour. Also, they lived in deep water because they were very shy and they would only come up to the surface for air.
And they swam in groups, right? Especially during the mating season in spring.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure I read somewhere that Yangtze River dolphins struggled with their hearing.
It was their vision, actually, but I wouldn't use the word struggle because they developed an advanced ability to use sound to figure out their location instead. It's known as echolocation. They also used it to socialise, avoid predators and express emotions.
I know a really interesting fact about all dolphins that might be relevant for our presentation.
Go on.
When dolphins are sleeping, half of their brains stay awake so they can control their breathing. Dolphins need 8 hours of sleep, but unlike us, their brain sleeps in shifts. Each of the right and left parts get 4 hours of sleep, just at different times.
And when they're awake, they spend most of their day finding food, apparently. They also swallow their food whole when they're feeding.
Awesome!
That is the end of exercise 5 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.